We are here on the DeMarco Wrestling Podcast. It is me, Greg DeMarco, of course, sitting next to, at least figuratively, the one and only wrestling realist himself, Patrick O'Dowd. Patrick, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be back.
Hey, I don't think I should welcome you. You're not a guest.
I know, yeah, right?
You get no,
like
you get no welcome.
I walked through the front door and went straight to your refrigerator. Like, that's what I did.
And you should do that. I would be upset if you didn't do that.
I mean, you're allowed.
Yeah, and I would. I would as well. By the way, Patrick O'Dowd, this one's for you.
We're beautiful and we wrestle.
Aww.
It's been a while. I know, right? Of course, I have to follow it up. Just to remind you that she's married. That's all.
Thanks, dude.
Greatest wedding ever, though, I have to admit. Like, there, you know, I'm not going to go into details because I don't know what was shared on, you know, personal Facebook feeds versus public or whatever, but greatest wedding ever. And I should say no more.
Shut up!
Okay, I will. But we want to start off on this episode of the DeMarco Wrestling Podcast and talk a little bit about a match that is, you know, older now and took place a couple weeks ago by the time you're listening to this, but still, you know, it's aged well in its short life span so far. And that was the United Kingdom. Yeah, right? Not even
in 2 weeks.
Weeks,
it's aged well. Still
not even
relevant.
2 weeks. Because I'll get this out there before then. The United Kingdom Championship match held at TakeOver Chicago between the champion at the time, Tyler Bate, going one-on-one with his top rival and his equal in this whole UK championship scene the WWE has put together, the Bruiserweight, Pete Dunne. And this match was one of the most finely crafted, finely wrestled matches I have ever seen in my entire life. I'll go that far with it, Patrick O'Dowd. And maybe we'll let you start there. Just general, overall, what did you think of this particular contest?
It was a terrific match. It was a terrific, terrific match. I can't argue against easily being the best match of the show, and not even being really all that close by any stretch or any metric that I can come up with. I don't know that I can be like greatest match I've ever seen in my entire life or one of the great, like, I don't know where I would put it. It is only a week and a half old. And so as one who is not prone to hyperbole, it's a little early for me to be like, you know what, this goes in this echelon of greatness that for me really begins and ends with Savage Steamboat at WrestleMania 3 and kind of working from there. You know, I think that as we move forward, history will kind of tell you where it goes from just being the great match that it was and being well-crafted and well put together and, you know, psychology in a way that I think, was very relevant and timely in the way that match was put together, given, a lot of the interweb chatter that had been going on about the week and a half actually prior leading to that match, involving Randy Orton, Rip Rogers, and a whole host of Will Ospreay and a whole host of independent wrestlers chiming in as well. And so just a very enjoyable experience, a very, very good match to kind of stop and pause and be like, wow, that's crazy, crazy good. In the way these two guys worked together, there was definitely some poetry there.
Yeah, and part of it stems with the fact that, you know, in the, you know, 11-year career of Pete Dunne, I mean, he's probably spent 8 of them wrestling Tyler Bate. So it's, you know, and there's definite chemistry there. These guys have traveled all over the world together and have really opened up a lot of eyes to the British wrestling scene and probably had a lot to do with the WWE's decision to go this route with the United Kingdom Championship, which is, you know, fitting as to why they would be the two at the forefront. And for me, I went there right away, and I am prone to hyperbole, so I guess part of that is me. But to me, there's not much else I needed to see in terms of whether or not it's up there. I mean, I, you know, I've often printed the two greatest matches that I've ever seen, or two most favorite matches that I've ever seen. And just for reference, they are Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle from WrestleMania 21,
yep.
and
Correct.
Jushin Thunder Liger versus the Great Muta circa 1996, a.k.a. the Kishin Liger match, where Liger rips off his mask and his outfit just to be all painted up underneath. And just amazing storytelling and in-ring action in both of those matches. And as soon as that match was over, I was like, yep, that's it's now the three most favorite matches that I've ever seen. And it's most favorite for a reason. It's a personal list. And I don't think you can go any further beyond a personal list. I think
yep.
no one person, in my opinion, can tell you what the greatest wrestling matches are. Star ratings be damned.
Star ratings be nothing. You know what's great. You know what's great when you see great. And here's the thing is, you know, you talk about, you know, how wonderful that match. The crowd was eating out of their palms by the time,
yeah.
like out of the palm of their hands, the work that was going on there, and you know things that it was. And here's the thing: it wasn't that the match itself was. Like that they put together some like ridiculous series of spots that blew your mind. Like there wasn't some sequence, I guess in my mind, like one sequence that really like this is it, this is the pinball. It is very much the story that they were trying to tell. And for me, you know, Tyler Bate just being flummoxed as to how to put Dunn away. Like throughout that whole match, and just like by the time, you know, towards the end, like he is literally out of tricks by the time we get to the end of that match.
Well, in both wrestlers, even Pete Dunne, you know, when he hits the X-plex, but instead of finishing as a suplex, goes right into a powerbomb, and then, you know, curls up the powerbomb just like Bate does when he hits the Tyler Driver 97. He had that same look on his face. Like, how in the world did he kick out of that? And that's one of the things that the Brits do better than the Americans do is the facial expressions. And I'm not saying that no Americans do or anything like that, but they get that part of psychology and the way that your face tells a story. And it's funny because if you go through, you know, Progress Wrestling and many of the other British companies that are out there, you don't see a ton of masks or face painting at all. And I'm sure I'm missing one or two, and that's fine, but not nearly as prevalent as it is here. Hell, on the indie scene here, I mean, every third wrestler seems to have their face painted nowadays.
Yeah.
So, and that goes, you know, it's hard to tell a story with your face when you do that, depending on how skilled you are. And for these two guys to put on the match they did with the facial expressions, and there were spots. There were spots like crazy. I mean, there were some great moments, you know, Bate jumping over and then hitting the moonsault to the outside on Undone was fantastic. And the crowd, like you said, the crowd came to their feet, I think on three separate occasions for these guys. And the crowd was wonderful. I mean, they went to, you know, from chanting, you know, NXT to chanting UK. So you had an American crowd chanting UK during this match and really showing their appreciation for the competitors. And then they started chanting Fight Forever, because that's what we do. And that's fine.
Fight Forever. Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing, that you can't fight forever because the finish factors into the match. And I recently saw a Twitter post, and it wasn't about wrestling, believe it or not. It was about psychology in general. And it said, you will remember two things from any event, the emotional high and how it ended. And I've talked about this so many times, just not as, you know, academically, with the world of professional wrestling and the UFC, and how so many people will judge a UFC card on the main event, and rightfully so. And wrestling has the advantage because you should be able to determine the ending and how it finishes and how you go home. I know, Patrick O'Dowd, it's crazy to think, but you know, we're going a little too far with statements like this, but you know, professional wrestling is predetermined.
You stop that right now.
I know. I'm sorry.
You stop that.
I know.
You just made the list.
I'm really sorry, Chris Jericho.
Yeah, my whole world is crumbling around me. I had no idea. No idea, I tell you.
I'm sorry. I'll make you feel better. I'll I'll make you feel better.
And I love you, Greg.
Oh, actually, that was for me. That would make
me
feel
better.
Yeah,
it didn't make
me
feel
better
at all.
You. I'm sorry.
Nobody loves me. I'm the Charlie Brown of
love you.
Wrestling. I'm the Charlie Brown of wrestling podcast.
People love
you. Ain't on the list, bro.
The Rodney Dangerfield of wrestling podcasts. No
you
respect.
Just alienated 90% of our audience. Good job.
It's okay. Why? Because
no,
they don't know
did.
Who Rodney Dangerfield
did.
Is.
You did.
If you haven't watched Back to School Kids, if you haven't watched Back to School Kids, go find your Netflix, look it up, watch that movie, and learn all about a triple indie. It'll be okay.
You're welcome.
That's right. He doesn't wrestle for Impact
anymore.
Nobody cares. nobody cared.
It's funny too. He recently tweeted at our good buddy Rip Rogers, and it was kind of
like,
I had a great career and don't have any injuries. Like, I think he might be done.
Unceremoniously. He did his thing.
He did. It just didn't, that was his second chance.
It didn't really work.
Made the most of it. Made the most of it indeed.
Yeah,
Liberace
thing.
Yeah, that didn't go quite so well. But, again, 2 years ago, Jinder was quite hindered, and now he's the WWE champion. So
you
never know. Damian Sandow could always make a return, show up, and be absolutely wonderful.
It could be. But anyway, you mentioned – yeah, let's go back to the match though, real quick.
Maybe.
Because here's the thing: you mentioned Rip, and I think you should actually be very proud of me, that in all of these segments that we've been doing since we came back, I haven't brought it up, and yet the stuff that happened in this match that was directly something that I saw out of one of Rip Rogers' tweets, and that was a move that Dunn did more than once, and is part of what really was the big argument that was coming out of Rip Rogers and to some extent vicariously Randy Orton. And that's this idea of the psychology of the reaction to a big move, and what happens after a big move. And one of the tweets, and I don't have the exact tweet in front of me, this was not the big tweet that made all the news in the whatever the post was. Not that one, but following up as he continued to talk about this.
You mean
on
that
the Twitter.
2 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago, there was more than one tweet on Twitter?
Well, I know, but I'm just saying he has been able to ride the wave of this news bit to every day. And what's interesting is it's not even really anything different than what he's tweeted any other time. Just
of course not.
Wanks went nuts over it this time.
Well, no, it was Randy Orton.
Randy
Orton tweeted, and Wanks went nuts over it.
Yeah. So he talks about the big move. And one of the things that I wrote a very brief response in which I had said, if people think that Randy Orton and Rip Rogers hate dives and super kicks, they didn't really read what Rip said. Because what Rip really talks about is this idea of making a move valuable and legitimate. And the point being that if there is a match of nothing but a dozen dives that happen in the middle of the ring that people kick out of, nobody's going to care about that move. They're not going to really buy it as being the real deal and leading towards the finish. He said the things that you can do, though, are say you take that dive and you're the heel and you know you got to lose. It's about positioning yourself in a place in the ring where you're either – putting your foot on a rope or able to roll out and take a powder. Because what it does is it shows that the move was enough to finish you had it not been for something else. And so the move then still has value and still matters. But when, I thought back to I remember our first indie show that we went together, that RH, do you remember one of the overriding lines that happened in the crowd as we were watching that show?
How could I ever forget? There's some random fan going, if I see one more super kick.
That's the point of that argument. And that is what Pete Dunne didn't do in this match. He took a couple of huge hit moves from Tyler and he powdered out of the ring.
Yep.
And got out of there and started the 10 count. And so, just a very classic psychological thing that guess what, fans? You got to see the fancy move. You got to see it. It was there. And because of the way that Dunn sold it and the way that Dunn got out of the ring, it gave that move more credibility in my mind. It made it a more valuable move.
Oh, yeah, and they did it. I mean, you never saw the Tyler driver. He never got a chance to hit it. Because he always got out of it, especially at the finish. But he came close to seeing it, and that was the point. And the only time that Dunn hit the bitter end was the finisher, you know, and because the other time Tyler Bate reversed it into a DDT, and a DDT after which, you know, Pete Dunn rolled out of the ring. And the DDT was the move that Rip was talking about on Twitter, about how you either roll out of the ring or you do it near the ropes, the foot can get on the ropes, or if you're not near the ropes, you pull the tight so the ref can catch you. I mean, there was all these things that he was talking about that just, you know, if you listen, it just makes sense. And that's the crazy thing about it sometimes is when it just makes sense. But so many things that were done so well in this match. I will say one thing about the finish of this match, or not the finish, but the outcome. I was actually sad to see Tyler Bate lose. And I should have known. I mean, these two guys built the division, essentially, for the WWE. Mm-hmm. They were in the finals of the tournament. Bate, you know, went on his tear through all four matches, whereas Dunn built his character from the end of the first show, attacking Ben Gradwell. It was Ben Gradwell. I might have the first name wrong. Before, you know, at the end of their show, and then attacking his opponents before the match. I mean, all the stuff that he did just to completely establish that character. So they were setting it up to eventually go to Pete Dunne. I was on the impression, or I guess not the impression, just my own personal assumption that Dunne might have found his way fast-tracked to NXT or 205 Live. But who knows, he might, because, you know, they're not really doing a ton with this UK thing right now, as we found out. And there's a lot of speculation that they don't really have a plan, and that's kind of upsetting. And maybe not. I don't know. But we'll get there in a second, depending on time. But looking at, you know, this match and Tyler Bate, and why I was upset that he lost is because midway through this match, Tyler Bate became my absolute favorite babyface in professional wrestling right now. I mean, he is a quintessential babyface. Like, you know, from the waving to the crowd to the you know, youthful exuberance, he's got the look. Somebody posted that they were upset that Tyler Bate already changed his look by going adding the beard to the mustache. And I'm like, the dude's 20.
Yeah, right?
You know, he's a millennial. They might change their look every day. Like, it doesn't matter. And who cares if he added a beard? Like, everyone has a beard. Except Pete Dunne, by the way. Completely clean shaven. Nowadays, a heel is clean shaven. It's crazy. But used to always know the bad guys, even in movies, by the beard. Now you can't know that. But he just is so good. And he's in shock when he doesn't win. And he's in shock when he does win. And it's almost like he is in awe of what he's doing. And can't believe that he's able to do what he's able to do. And you feel it with him. And that's what you're supposed to do. And I think, you know, that's why he was the ideal choice to win the UK Championship Tournament, because he so easily got everyone behind him. And you didn't think he was going to win. I mean, Dunn was the favorite going in, and as things were moving along, he kind of remained the favorite, especially once Trent Seven was out. And yet there it was in the end. You know, you were looking at Tyler Bate as the champion. And based on the NXT tapings that took place recently, even though Bate wasn't there and Dunn was, it seems like that feud is going to continue. And it probably should, in my opinion.
I mean, really, and it's like you said, though, what do they got going right now with that?
Yeah, it's hard.
It's the European title part two.
It kind of is, because it's being defended in America. It changed hands in Chicago, which, you know, we should have a problem with, but we don't. The United Kingdom Championship changed hands in Chicago. I know, so we don't care. Now, if the United States Championship changed hands in the UK, we'd be all pissed. But
You know what? Maybe not the United States Championship. Just because of where they actually value the United States Championship.
That's true.
Like, you know, I want to bring up one other thing though. Well, because you harken back to the tournament, we never really got a chance to talk about either of the tournaments that have taken place so far. Like, kind of these special edition tournaments. Both of them, though, have had I mean, TJ Perkins, I guess, winning was not completely unexpected, but sort of unexpected results. Like, I actually have kind of liked the overall construction of the winners coming out of those tournaments. You know, it makes me really interested in the what the Mae Young tournament's going to look like and who the field's going to be and who comes out of that one, because they really have done a pretty good job of kind of bucking the convention on some level. Especially
well, it's funny, too, because when you look at the final four of the CWC, if you put them in order of who was going to win, I would have had Perkins fourth in that order, just based on, even though I didn't want Zach Sabre Jr. to win, I would have had him, Kota Ibushi, or Grand Metalik all finishing ahead of Perkins in that order. But it's all about who's under contract, because they were presenting the winner with the championship. And that's something that, you know, we didn't know at the time. With the United Kingdom championship tournament, it's different. I will say this. I put the United Kingdom championship tournament far higher in terms of entertainment value than the CWC. And it has nothing to do with word dive or anything. It's the storytelling that, and it was a 2-day tournament, you know, whereas this other one was taped over the course of several weeks and of course aired over even more weeks. And it's harder to tell those long, you know, stories along that line when you're not seeing guys for several weeks at a time. Whereas the United Kingdom Championship, it was boom, boom, two shows. And you had the overarching story of what Pete Dunne was doing and Tyler Bates run through the tournament, and it was so well done. And that kind of brings me to the UK sort of division itself, because they went over and they did these tapings. And I hate to say it, but it's the truth in my opinion, and I've heard from some others as well. The UK Championship special they put out right before TakeOver sucked.
Yep.
I didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
And the reason I didn't like it was it was in like this studio, and it just wasn't the right atmosphere. The crowd was kind of subdued. They did 2 days worth of tapings, and they came out of it with four matches that they could broadcast. And one of them featured three members of the 205 Live roster and one random guy from the UK. And it just didn't, you know. And then the other ones were, you know, Pete Dunne, Trent Seven, Mark Andrews, you know, Tyler Bate, Wolfgang. It just was, you know, everybody that you expected to see. And Joseph Connors, another person who they were touting like crazy during the UK tournament. That was Michael Cole's pick to win the whole thing, which told me, A, he wasn't going to win, but B, they really liked the guy because they wouldn't have done that otherwise.
Yeah, you don't put them on unless you do something.
You have, and they taped like, you know, 7 or 8 matches per show. So you're talking about somewhere between 14 and 16 matches. And you came out of this thing with four. And I don't think it's because of the quality of the matches. I think it was because of the quality of everything else. And my opinion, you know, TakeOver is something that's outstanding. And you can tell a story, and through videos, through highlights on NXT, through commercials during WWE broadcasts, to where you're building specials out of the UK. And you can go to the UK once a month or once every 2 months and just do a special and do it at the Empress Ballroom, not at this whatever they just did it at, where they were sitting in lawn chairs, which a lot of people were getting
people were showing pictures of.
Who cares? They had a place to sit. But I feel like they went over there and they were like, wait, this isn't what we expected. And it started to look like it had the generic yellow logo instead of the United Kingdom Championship logo. And it had the white ropes instead of the red ropes. And it just the tournament looked more authentic, and this didn't. This looked very clinical almost.
And that kind of tells you that's an investment thing in my mind. You know, Triple H's presence notwithstanding, when something doesn't look important, people don't treat it important. You know what I mean?
And, 100%.
You know, if you create the environment that doesn't get you excited. Like, I've been to house shows at the WWE in the WWE, and even then, like, they still do. There's still a level of atmosphere that's created. That while not Raw or SmackDown or a pay-per-view, still gets you to be like, yeah, this is the thing I want to see and be a part of. I get that, you kind of were laughing about the people walking. I get why that's kind of a crappy experience, though. Like, if you paid good money and you're like, here's your lawn chair, like, Well, and I don't know if they were, if you had to pay or if the tapings were free. I don't even remember. But like, here's your WWE experience. Your WWE UK experience is a white lawn chair you can get at Target, or whatever they have in Britain. Because I don't
right.
know. Maybe do they have Target? I don't know.
I don't know.
But yeah, like I mean, if you established all this stuff in the previous, you know, in the tournament, that should have carried over. Like, and that's a fundamental like thing that should just carry over. Like the look of the ring should carry over.
Yeah, they it should have, and it didn't, and I think they realized that. And I have a feeling because Triple H was over there. I think he came out of that tape and he was like, "Oh crap, we can't do that. We can't do this. Like we got to scramble something together." To not show that we were wasting money, but we did. And it's funny because these are the tapings they put together that supposedly ran against shows put on by Paige's family in the UK. That talk kind of died down. I don't know if those shows happened, if they were moved, whatever may have happened. But it just, you know, it just didn't feel like it should have. And I just didn't, you know, I didn't love it. And didn't even have even watching this, I was like, man, this is just not what I want to see, and I felt bad.
So
I felt bad for Tyler Bate and Mark Andrews, who put on a hell of a match, and it just didn't resonate the way it would have in the right environment.
So you're saying I can skip it? That's what I just heard there.
I would tune in for the last two matches. There's only four.
That's
so,
half the show. So
I
there
know.
You go.
That's weird. It's like a 90-minute special, and Jim Ross and Nigel McGuinness did it from Stamford. They weren't in the building.
Geez, wow.
I know.
It's,
but
it's
yet
like,
they superimposed
like,
them as if they were standing on the stage with their back to the crowd, and you could tell
man.
It was superimposed.
So
Another
it was like
time
an
they
AWA
were standing.
Show.
Yeah,
dude,
they were standing
just,
in front of what looked like the stage, and it wasn't. Yeah, just bad.
Yeah. You described the end of the AWA. Like, when they had that like crappy studio where like 30 people were, and like they would superimpose Ron Trungard in front of whatever, or Eric Bischoff, like, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, WWF used to do it with
yeah,
some of their shows.
I do.
That's nothing
Superstars,
new.
Superstars, All American Wrestling. Yeah, I remember all those.
They used to do that stuff.
Yeah. It just, you can feel it. Like, it's like you said, though, like, you can feel it. Like, yeah, every company does it. But it makes something that's not – it makes something not special.
Right, and that's what it basically did. Like, yet it was called a special. It's like, when is a special not special? When the WWE does this crap from the UK, apparently.
Yep.
And it's hard because after the tournament and the matches in NXT that they've done related to the brand have been amazing as well, I felt bad for everyone involved. I felt bad for the performers because – it was a huge step down, and it wasn't a good representation of British wrestling either. I mean, I'm this close to signing up for Demand Progress, and so that I can watch their product, and they recommend – they're on like chapter 49 now or something, and they recommend you start from chapter 1, which I would do, and it's not that expensive, and I've considered it based upon this experience because I want to see more of this same stuff. And so it's too bad. But, you know, luckily for Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne, they got to do their thing in front of like 15,000 people in Chicago. So, and it worked. It really did just work to a crazy degree. And maybe it'll continue through NXT. I mean, you know, Dunne has a match, you know, I don't know if title match or non-title that he did at the NXT tapings. He ran down Bate afterwards. Like, this is gonna continue, that's for sure. And I was really, and it's sad too because, you know, they had Swan teaming with a local, you know, UK guy against TJ Perkins and Brian Kendrick. And it just, you know, whereas during the UK special, they brought out, you know, pre Aleister Black, Tommy End, and Neville, you know, before Neville won the Cruiserweight title. And again, it just was a way, you know, a much bigger deal done there.
People from the United Kingdom wrestling in the United Kingdom special.
Yeah, right, it's crazy.
You know, as the filler match to give those guys
some. Yeah, and it worked.
Yeah, it's fine.
But and they just didn't do it right this time around. And it's rare. I mean, we love people love to complain about the WWE and the IWC loves it, but the stinker that they did in the UK that no one's really calling a stinker, because they don't remember. Like Triple H touted this as tapings for the weekly show, and it didn't happen like that. And no one's really bringing it up. Why? Because Bate and Dunn went out there and just absolutely killed it.
Yep, that's all you got to do.
By the way, 4.75 stars from Dave Meltzer on that match. Just saying.
Yeah, well, they weren't from Japan, so they couldn't get 5.
I know, right? They weren't in Japan.
But
I'm from Japan. Yeah.
Yes. Only great matches happened in Japan.
True.
Yeah, what do I know? This is really hypocritical, because you know what I was watching right before I came down here?
What?
I was watching Okada versus Tanahashi from New Japan, Tokyo Dome.
You've become like this Japan guy.
On Axis. I watched Okada get his first pin on Tanahashi, and then I just came back down here and was like, fuck Japan. No, I can't say that. No.
Oh, it's amazing. It really is, though.
Speaking of weird, listening to people do play-by-play in a studio, Jim Ross and Josh Barnett not livecasting.
It's not the same. They could, but they're not.
I mean, that's expensive. Access ain't going to pay for that.
Oh, no, I understand. But the WWE didn't even send people over there. Like, Nigel's from there. Like, you could have put them over there for 2 days. You sent Colin McGinnis over there the first time and had him sit, like, up in this cool little booth. Like, everything about the Empress Ballroom is perfect for this. And you just didn't.
It should just be where they do their show.
They really should. And just do it every 2 months, you know, send out a special, record some vignettes, you know, use highlights, you know, like you've done in the past. It's all you got to do. It's just, and you're just feeding people just a little bit and they'll be happy. And it just speaks to that and the issues with 205 Live, which we'll get into because apparently their numbers on the network are really, really bad. So it's something that we'll have to get into at some point because it needs some fixing. That's for sure. But just to sum it all up, I mean, Bate versus Dunn, I can't say enough good things about it. And I know, you know, hopefully it will age well for you. But to me, it was just absolutely phenomenal. What do you think? How would you sum it up?
My overall like feeling of the match, I think it was a terrific match. I think it's easily amongst the best of the year. But again, I'm not prone to hyperbole. So right now, I think it's one of the best matches of the year, and I'll have to watch it about 2 or 3 more times and you know, kind of decide how I feel after that. I mean, for me, you know, you were talking about your Mount Rushmore matches. Like, for me, it's Savage Steamboat, and it's Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker 1. And by 1, I mean the WrestleMania 1. Like, I know they wrestled it other times, but the first was 25. Like, that match was terrific. Those are kind of my top two. Like, when I want to watch something, those are the go-tos.
There you go. So, you heard it there from the wrestling realist Patrick O'Dowd. Those are the go-tos. So, during this episode, you now have 5 go-to matches between the two of us that you can listen to. So, those of you listening,
Even watch. Like, you don't just...
Greg DeMarco, I need you. I can't live without you. I want you right now.
Agencies around the world are receiving breaking news that CM Punk has sneezed while at a hockey game, which clearly indicates he has signed a new contract with WWE. He then confirmed his return by tweeting something completely unrelated to wrestling. Backstage sources believe he'll come back at SummerSlam, but plans may change.
Patrick, this is Leigh Emery, and I just wanted to say that I love Patrick O'Dowd.
Oh, I'm out of snow. Bullshit, 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 bullshit.
The Wrestling Realist Patrick O'Dowd's Bullshit Edit Report of the Week.
We are back with Patrick O'Dowd's favorite segment here on the DeMarco Wrestling Podcast, and that is the Bullshit Internet Wrestling Report of the Week. Now, we're not going full-blown this time around, because this was just special.
Well, because we don't have to. Like,
yeah, no kidding.
That's the thing. You don't have to. Like, it was funny because you sent me this article, this report, which I'm trying to find out. Is this just sourced from the website that it's on, or is it sourced from somewhere else before I rip it?
No, you can rip it. They're sourcing it solely based on the YouTube video that was uploaded
okay.
by the WWE.
So this comes from Sports Keto. And the reason, and I think everybody's going to know why we only needed to do one story.
Yeah, it should be painfully
for
obvious.
This once I read the headline. Because the headline is, from the WWE rumor mill, WWE preparing for CM Punk return? ?
What?
And for those of you who have forgotten, Punk unceremoniously left the WWE in 2014 because he thought he could beat people up for real, and we all know how that's worked out so far. But here's the story. This is what
Well, hang on. Before you do one of the story, read the secondary part of the headline.
The Punk left the company in 2014, but there may be a slight chance that he could return to the WWE. Yeah.
I mean, that's just outstanding. Like, that just says it all right there.
It's almost verbatim the British dude who's making the thing about him sneezing.
I know. Like, that's what makes it so amazing.
So I like the way they set their article up, though, too, because it's structured. We got bullet or we got unbolded like subheadings. So the first one
that's
is
their
what's
formula.
The story. Yes. So what's the story? For the first time in a long while, WWE has posted a CM Punk related YouTube video up on their channel. The straight edge superstar has not been seen in the company ever since walking out the night after the Royal Rumble back in 2014. Then, in case you didn't know, CM Punk and the WWE have been battling back and forth ever since. Not really. Punk left 3 years ago with a number of lawsuits furthering the friction between the two parties.
A number
recently, however,
of lawsuits.
Yes, a number, maybe one. Recently, however, things have seem to have stagnated with no real word on how things are progressing between Punk and his former employers. The former WWE champion is currently in limbo following a debut MMA loss to Mickey Gall at UFC 203. The uploaded video in question was CM Punk versus The Rock at Elimination Chamber in 2013, where The Great One defeated Punk to retain his WWE Championship. There's a chance that this is being done just to mock the Chicago native, but more often than not, the company tends to upload videos of stars just before they return to the squared circle. What's next? Man, this is a lot of work for this one article. We'll likely hear more developments on this issue over the next few days and weeks, with things like this typically spreading like wildfire throughout the WWE universe. If it turns out to be nothing more than a typical upload, then we can expect to see Punk step back inside the octagon a lot sooner than he puts on a pair of wrestling boots. Probably.
That's the most asinine sentence in the whole thing, actually.
Yep. Author's take, which shame on you for an author's take. Even if this turns out to be nothing, shame on you for posting this and then giving your own take on it. Even if this turns out to be nothing important, it's great to start speculating over whether or not Punk will be returning to pro wrestling anytime soon. No, it's not. Of course, many fans believe that it's much more likely he'll show up in New Japan or ROH, but Vince McMahon has made up with numerous superstars over the years. That is true. So there's a possibility that this could happen. That's not true. Just no. And like, shame on you for posting this for your hope. Because that's what I believe. Is that this dude saw this video and was like, this is what we got to do. We got to stoke that fire because we know it'll get clicks. And we're going to create the hope that we know doesn't exist. Like, unless you secretly hope it exists. So you, sir, Mr. I got to scroll up to find Harry Kettle, which is a god-awful name, and I hope it's not your real name because that's very unfortunate. Shame on you for posting this bullshit speculation based on a video put up on a YouTube channel owned by a company that was posting their own content on their YouTube channel. They do it all the time. They post Chris Benoit videos until he killed people, and then they still keep him on their WWE network. He's not coming back, and they're not going to put him in the Hall of Fame. Stop it.
First of all, the author of this article is British. So
I hope so. With a name
I looked
like
him
Kettle.
Up. Looked him up on the old Twitter there just by clicking the link.
Harold.
Yeah. He's got 397 followers. He's got more than you. So
I don't care. He posted this bullshit article 97 right now.
Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. The funny thing that strikes me, and I said it already, that really, 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 really asinine sentence that was in there. It's under that what's next section. If it turns out to be nothing more than a typical upload. Now, wait a minute. Did you just say nothing more than a typical upload? Because earlier in your very same article, you said something very, very different. You said, more often than not, the company tends to upload videos of stars just before they return to the squared circle. Now, would you, Patrick, go down, and just being a normal, rational human being who somewhat understands the English language, would you think there's some kind of correlation between the phrase more often than not and the word typical?
They seem connected.
Right? But yet he says if this turns out to be nothing more than a typical upload. So saying that the typical upload isn't them teasing someone who would be returning to the company. And then he goes on to say, then we can expect Punk to step inside the octagon. Capital O for the octagon, which by the way means the UFC octagon, which Dana White has kind of already said probably isn't going to happen anytime soon. A lot sooner than he puts on a pair of wrestling boots. That's just because he's now contradicted himself before he goes into his author's take, which the author's take in this instance was just four lines of completely, you know, it was Wrestling Observer potential backtracking at its best, where he basically said 14 different things to where no matter what happens, he's right.
Yes.
This is terrible. This is irresponsible journalism.
Can I tell you what? I want to go back to this author's take because you know what really is, I think, as somebody who cares about this a lot and cares about good reporting a lot, what really sets me off is this line about how it's great to start speculating over whether or not Punk will be returning to pro wrestling anytime soon. Because if you're on any message board, if you're anywhere around any sort of dirt sheet site, if you go to a WWE arena in Chicago, we're still like, there's no starting. They've still been speculating about this sorry ass piece of shit. I'm sorry. I hate him. I hate him so much. And I hate that people want him back. Like, I hate it because I'm sorry, like whatever his reasons were, and if he walked away, great. I'm sure they're wonderful. But for a guy to walk away and then just take a big shit sandwich and feed it to his fans left and right on Twitter that try to interact and talk with him, to rip up and down on everything and every experience that has to do with pro wrestling and to want him back and to see fans continue, like it just makes me bang my head against the wall. When every time CM Punk's name comes up, we got to talk about whether or not he's coming back to the WWE. That speculation isn't going to get started. It's well into its, you know, 900th life cycle at this point in internet years. And so that's just, it's insulting to be like, it's great to start speculating. That's almost like, I'm angry about that line. Angry.
Yeah, it was bad. That line is terrible. Like, it's great to start speculating. It's basically sizzling saying, oh, we know this is crap, but isn't this fun? Isn't this fun to just sit here and do this? No, it really isn't. It's a waste of your life. It's a waste of your life, Harry.
Stop waiting for CM Punk.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I'm not vehemently against CM Punk someday returning. In fact, I once wrote in a 411 Mania column that I firmly believe he will wrestle at WrestleMania 35. And that's, you know, 2 years away because money talks. And this whole lawsuit, everything was all about money. And so I think that Vince will throw enough money at him. He'll go there to probably be against John Cena, and it'll probably be a one-shot deal, quote-unquote, and it'll be lots of fun, and everyone will be happy, and it'll draw like crazy, and it'll get all kinds of attention, and everyone will be happy, and they'll be smiling, and who knows what happens. It's just the way that things happen to work sometimes. But if that's going to happen, if that theme song is ever going to hit again and he's going to come walking through there, then I hope we don't know. I hope we have no earthly idea that it's about to happen. I hope it is a complete and total 100% surprise, because then it'll be a moment. And the more and more we talk about it, the less and less that it's, you know, probably actually going to happen. Here's the other thing. If you really want the guy to come back, if you really want CM Punk to walk out that on that stage again after that theme song hits, stop paying attention to him, because he is an attention whore. That's all he wants is attention. That's all he cares about is attention. And the only way you're going to get him back, or the easiest way you're going to get him back, is to not give him what he wants. Is to not give him the attention, make him work for it, make him come out of retirement for it, make him show up, and that'll do it. Once he realizes he's irrelevant, then he'll come back so he can become relevant again. It's the only way it's going to happen.
I got to tell you, I'll be the only fan who's not happy when he comes back. Like, I can't. Like, and maybe I'll change my mind in 2 years when he makes your magical WrestleMania return. I can't. Like, and there have been there have been plenty of wrestlers I don't care for who have come back, and I've been fine with them coming back. Like, you know, you can call me a hypocrite if you think that because I loved that The Rock came back, I loved it.
Right.
But here's the thing: it's not that he left, or why, or even the why. It's what he did after he left, and the way he is with folks. Like, that's what drives me nuts. Is The Rock was never a dick to people after he left. Like, he did. He went and pursued an acting career, and it was okay. And the fact that people will forgive CM Punk for so much, but jump down Roman Reigns' throat for being a company guy, blows my mind. Like, just blows my mind that you will give him no inch, no quarter, but CM Punk can call you the worst of the worst and everything. And I'm sorry, I think the guy kind of means it. It's not a kayfabe thing. And you'll welcome him back with a big old embrace, a big old hug, and I'm sure he'll make a shit ton of money for the WWE when he does. I will not be happy.
Well, Patrick O'Dowd, you're missing one very, very key and obvious point as to why it's okay for CM Punk versus not okay for Roman Reigns, and that's because Roman Reigns sucks.
Believe that!
That's why the internet sucks.
You don't even believe that, Greg.
Of course not. No, you know that. You know that. I don't believe that at all. That's why I played that song.
Roman Reigns does not suck. Yeah.
No, not at all. He's a fantastic performer, and anybody, AJ Styles will tell you that. Think about that. Their hero, AJ Styles, will tell you how great of a performer Roman Reigns is. Daniel Bryan, their hero, will tell you how great of a performer.
Put him over like Roman Reigns. Put him over
hard. Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, people are stupid.
It's your playlist thing, you know, and I get it. But
100%.
Yeah, anyway, to wrap this up, this is just 100% grade A, big steaming pile. It's not even bullshit. Like, this is bigger than bullshit. Like, this is like rhinoceros / elephant size shit. Like, this is just a big, steaming, stinking pile of just wrong, awful shit. And you should be ashamed for publishing it, Sportskeeda. And Harry, whatever your name was, British guy, you should be ashamed for writing it. Harry Kettle, I'm done.
Y'all wouldn't know entertainment if it slapped you in the face.
And that music you hear is, of course, the now infamous and much more famous theme song of your WWE champion, Jinder Mahal. No, we do not have Jinder Mahal with us at this point, but we are privileged to welcome to the show Raymond Najjar. Raymond penned an article, I guess penned is a word we can still use these days, for Kingside Seats and just an amazing article titled The Ultimate Guide to Understanding Jinder Mahal. And it obviously got a lot of attention, and deservedly so. I happened across it, shared it as much as I could because it deserved to be shared, and put it in the groups that I have clearance in, really because I wanted people to see it and learn from it, because there's a lot of uninformed people out there. And Raymond, first of all, let me back up. Welcome and thank you for joining us.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
No problem. No problem at all. So let's go back to the article. What was your motivation behind it? What made you decide to do this?
It's actually a funny story. It's, you know, I was – so first of all, when he got that push and when he won that six-man tag, I was surprised. I've always kind of been behind Jinder just because I knew he was Punjabi and just based off the last name and his name altogether. But when he won the championship that day, right after he won, I was kind of scrolling through Twitter and whatnot, and then I just saw a lot of people were confused, mainly with the intricacies of the religion, not the religion, but the culture. And the thing that got me, that motivated me, was somebody made a comment about the carpet. And they were like, you know, why aren't they bringing out a longer carpet? Is he trying to get his shoes dirty? You know, what's going on? And, you know, is it a flying magic carpet? You know, stuff like that. And I had to go ahead and write a piece about that and explain the culture.
Right.
So it inspired me. I wanted to get it out there, man. I wanted to get it, you know, the differences, and let people know, you know, kind of the backstory, because WWE doesn't have time to explain these things.
Right. And the backstory, the great thing about the backstory is it's real. I mean, it's legitimate. That's one of the things that you talk about. Like, there's, you know, people don't understand how, I guess, well this is done, and how well they focused in and got the details right, whether it was on purpose or whether it just happened because it's so genuine. You know, and
they're handling
an
it perfectly. Sorry to interrupt you there. I was just going to say.
No, you're good.
They're handling it.
Anyway.
No, they're handling it perfectly. I know people think, oh, this is offensive. You know, he's being a foreigner heel. They're doing the same thing with they did with Muhammad Hassan. They are not doing the same exact thing. I'll tell you that, just because they're handling it very delicately, man. They're going with every detail. And I'm telling, Jinder has a say in this, because he has to have a say in it, because every little thing is on point and on par with the culture.
So what are some big things that people can see that they can realize, okay, this is what makes this legit?
The littlest thing would be when, you know, he comes out of the limo, and the Singh Bros, I know it looks silly just from a Westerner point of view, and I was born in the United States, so it's still funny to me. So when they pull out this carpet out of the trunk of a car, and then they lay it out, and he comes out of the limo, and they're cleaning it, they're picking off things off of it.
Mm-hmm.
That is a legitimate thing. Cleaning the carpet just so he can come out and you know, put his feet on something that is clean, his first step on something that is not dirty like the ground. The first step, or the entrance, matters.
Okay. Yeah, very – no, and that's something that I – like you said, no one would know that. I shouldn't say no one, because there's plenty of people watching who would, but someone who's uneducated to this culture would just make other assumptions about that. And everyone – you know, loves the Maharaja name, and you shed some light on what that really is referring to. What is that referring to?
Oh yeah. The history behind that title is very deep, and just for, you know, this podcast purpose, I'm not gonna give you guys a history lesson, but you guys can check out the article to see more of that. But the main thing, the meaning behind the Maharaja is it translates to king, and he's portraying himself as the king of Punjab, which is a state in India. And essentially, he's the Maharaja. It has died out. There hasn't been a Maharaja in centuries. So what he's saying is he's the new savior. He's the new face of Punjab and India. So not just Punjab, India. He wants to basically decorrupt that area and bring pride to that area. That's his goal. So he's a face to that whole country. whether, you know, the Americans see it or not. And whenever he addresses his people, that's a face promo he's cutting for his people. So every time he speaks in Punjabi, it's a face promo.
Yeah, and I've seen some translations, and I think it's hilarious. So he's endearing to his people while getting just, you know, completely booed and destroyed by the fans in attendance who have no idea what he's saying. So it's like, well, he must be saying something bad, so we shall boo him, when you have no idea.
Yeah.
Which I think is fantastic, because that's exactly the way it should be. And there's probably someone, you know, sheer law of averages, there's someone in every crowd that he's talking to that knows what's up. And I think that's the greatest thing about it. So you mentioned this as well. So the Bollywood Boys, why couldn't they just come out and be the Bollywood Boys?
Just because, so with the whole Maharaja thing, he's coming off of basically a Punjabi theme. It's not essentially an Indian theme. His whole stable is Punjabi, because that's who he is. He's playing. I've heard like Stone Cold and all these other characters say this, you got to play like a very exaggerated version of yourself. And that's what he's doing. He's Punjabi, so he's playing an exaggerated version of himself. So with that, it has to stay true to the nature. Bollywood is essentially, it's more of an India concept where they'd have to be faced basically if they're Bollywood, I guess.
Okay.
It's in, like, all around.
Gotcha.
And they wanted to go more of the cultural approach, and they have to be the Singh Bros, because Singh means – it translates to lion in Punjabi, and also they are – that's basically the last name or the middle name given to every Punjabi person. So the Singh Bros are going by their middle names.
Okay. Yeah, because I know it's not their given names, but that makes sense if it's the middle names. So and that's – you know, it's so good. I love that they didn't dance during the celebration. I thought that was a great touch, just because dancing has been their gimmick for so long, and yet there they are not dancing.
And nothing against the Singh Bros. They're just – I mean, they're not that good at dancing. I've seen it.
I can't judge. I can't judge at all. So
I'm on an actual team. You guys saw on the Punjabi celebration. I'm on a Punjabi. It's called Bhangra. That's the dance. Bhangra is easier to say, but it's basically like a very acrobatic dance. And I'm on a team, so I could kind of judge them on it. And they're not that good. They're probably like a 3 out of 10.
Well, hey, we'll trust your judgment on that. Trust me, we will definitely do that. And according to your article, I mean, this the celebration that we saw is very, very common.
Oh yes, it's usually bigger with more color and everything like that. But it's in a WWE, you know, ring. So they basically, whatever you guys saw on TV was what you would see if you were invited to a Punjabi wedding. The dancers, the entrance, the whole extravagant nature of it. That's how a wedding is. And generally the lowest amount a couple would spend on a wedding is usually in the 10,000 range. So these weddings are extravagant. It's crazy. You know, your parents save for your wedding the day you're born. That's how big these weddings are. So
that's
whatever they did was true to nature.
And that's again, it just goes along with what you were saying. Like, everything they're doing is done accurately to a T, and the WWE doesn't always do that. And so it's great that they're putting this much. And we've been, you know, not shy in sharing our opinions. And I was, just to kind of give you some background, since you don't know, I appeared on another person's show back about a week or two after WrestleMania. And they wanted me to talk about Roman Reigns. And so I did. I talked about Roman Reigns and everything else. And I said, you know what? You need to give me 30 seconds at the end to talk about Jinder Mahal. And I basically – I took more than 30 seconds. That's what I do. But I basically said, you know, based upon the Battle Royal and then the two follow-up matches they had, including the match with Finn Balor, I said, I think they're going to push this guy. I didn't say he was going to win the championship back in April. I didn't say that, but I said, I think he changes brands. I think he gets a push. And for me, it was because of what he did at WrestleMania, because he went out there and he was given the job of make Rob Gronkowski look like $1 million, put this over.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, he also made Jinder Mahal look like $1 million. And to me, I saw that performance and I was like, that combined with how he's changed his physique, how he's changed is the facial expressions he was using. I was like, somebody's going to see this, and they're going to say, we're going to give this guy a shot. They gave him the ultimate shot. I mean, they gave him the biggest shot ever, and he took full advantage of it. And it's amazing
Definitely.
That he is the WWE champion. So I personally love it. But I feel like with these examples that we're seeing, the amount of detail that was put into the Punjabi celebration, the detail that's in the character, the fact that when he won the championship, they iso-shotted him the entire time. Never once went back to show Randy Orton. It wasn't about Randy Orton losing. It was about Jinder Mahal
mm-hmm.
winning. I don't think this is a flash in the pan short-term deal. I think they see something in Jinder that might last.
I think it might go past SummerSlam, honestly. And the reason why I think that is because Randy Orton lately, I mean, Randy Orton's one of my favorites, but lately I think we can all agree his mind really hasn't been into it. And he really put in the effort in that match. And I think that says more about something about Jinder than Randy, because Randy respects him. You could tell. The way he was working that match, he was really selling everything Jinder was throwing at him. So it just shows him that, you know, he's got a lot of support in the back too amongst his peers. And I don't know if you heard that the interview with Chris Jericho, but Vince is actually writing lines for Jinder, and he only does that for a few people.
Yeah, and it was funny because I remember reading that, and when Vince wrote the promo that Jinder cut after he became number one contender, and I remember Jinder saying he didn't like it. He didn't want to do what Vince wrote, but it's Vince, and so he did it. And then he saw the heat it got, and he was like, okay, Vince obviously knows what he's doing. And the great part was, he talked about in his first run, he used to avoid Vince. He used to try not to interact with Vince. And what I loved was not only that he doesn't do that anymore, but that in the current run, that he actually asked Vince after that, let me cut a promo on every house show. Like, he actually he realizes what it takes to get over, and it's not all about being in the ring. In fact, being in the ring is usually what comes last. And he gets that now, and he just put it in there. I think it's just he put everything together. And I think there's an element of right place, right time. They needed somebody, and they got somebody. But you're handed the ball for many different reasons in the world of professional wrestling. And he got the ball, and he ran a touchdown with it. And I hope he's now the starting running back. Like, I think it's amazing for what he's doing. And I just, you know, personally love to see it. It has nothing to do with the fact that I partially called it. It's because it's fresh and it's new. What do you think about all these people that basically said, we want change, we want change? And then when they got change, they were like, wait, that's not the change we wanted. And the reaction to Jinder Mahal.
True. And I'm not trying to, you know, just like you, I'm a fan. We're all fans. I'm not trying to change anybody's outlook. If you're a fan, he's a heel to you. He's a face to you. You know, it doesn't matter. My goal with writing that is I was just wanted to educate people on the little things on, you know, just that WWE's not messing. They're not dropping the ball on this. And, you know, I'm not trying to change anybody's view. If you hate him, boo him, man. You're a fan.
Right.
If you love him, cheer him, you know?
The best thing they can do for him is boo him. that is
– Yeah.
That's the reaction he's supposed to get. And
wait till
and
he goes to Canada.
To oh, I know. That's the thing. I have a relationship with somebody who's in Canada who used to be in the wrestling business. And these are private conversations, so I won't name names. But he's in Calgary, and he basically said, they're going nuts here for this guy. Like, they are so excited for one of their own – you know, to be getting this, and the same with every, you know, people in Vancouver for the Singh brothers. Like, they're just, you know, that there's a certain amount of pride, and I hope that they run through Calgary soon enough, and Jinder gets to walk in there with the title, because it's going to be what they like to call bizarro world, where all of a sudden everybody loves Jinder, and it's going to be, you know, interesting to see what happens moving forward. Heck, we asked on our show, what does Jinder do at WrestleMania? Because I believe he's not going anywhere. And the conclusion we came to was he gets put into the John Cena match. That Jinder by then will have lost the title, and he'll be that Bray Wyatt, Rusev type opponent for John Cena at WrestleMania, which win, lose, or draw, doesn't matter. That's a hell of a position to be put in, given where he was the year prior in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
I could see the Marine Cena coming out against Jinder Mahal.
I know.
At the main, not the main event, but the mid card of WrestleMania.
Yeah, that middle of the
you know,
card
that,
thing. Yep. Middle of the card. That, middle of the
he
card.
Could be an upper. He could be an upper mid card now, even if he loses the title,
oh, yeah.
And that's amazing. I like that.
And if he holds the belt, say to Royal Rumble, like a lot of people believe, or even SummerSlam, that's a long run in this day and age. That's, you know, the runs don't always go that long anymore. But it already, like, I compare this to like a Jack Swagger win, and it's already night and day better than a Jack Swagger title win because of the fact that they put so much detail into it and they're investing in it. And that's, you know, people just don't understand. They think he's, you know, I've heard people say that he's going to lose it on the July 4th SmackDown to John Cena representing America. Like, you don't get it if you feel that way, in my opinion.
Definitely. And the thing is, the key word you just said there is you heard people say, and the fact that mm-hmm. you're hearing people talk about this and there's controversy
yeah.
surrounding this, WWE's winning right now. Everybody's talking about Jinder Mahal. Yep, it's crazy. Did you know there's another Punjabi champion inside the WWE?
Is it, you mean the one currently, current day?
Right now. Can you
no,
name
I did
him?
Not.
Right now, inside the... Okay, he's in NXT, and he's one half of the Authors of Pain. His name is Ikem.
Okay.
And he's Punjabi, and yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking they might call him up in that Backlash pay-per-view.
Uh-huh.
And you know, have them interrupt maybe. But I don't think they're going to do that. But, you know, it's always a possibility when the Authors of Pain are called up and Jinder Mahal is still getting this push, they might
yeah.
join up with them. You never know.
That's something that I've seen suggested. Everyone seems to think there's going to be a fourth person added to this crew just because wrestling seems to do things in force. And you know, no one's really been able to pinpoint the proper guy. Ikem could be that, or both Ikem and Rezar, or maybe, you know, eventually he, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, dumps the Singh brothers and goes with the Authors of Pain. I think the Singh brothers are doing a phenomenal job, and I think they're perfect for Jinder. One of the reasons they're perfect for Jinder is because of their size, being on the main roster. They can't win a match for him. They can run a distraction,
mm-hmm.
but in the end, Jinder still wins the match. And to me, that's only good for Jinder.
Did you see, I mean, this is basically my opinion on that
mm-hmm.
Backlash match. I didn't see any heel manager type interruptions from the Singh Bros. It was more of like a sacrificial type of thing. What do you think about that?
When they pulled Jinder out, that was the one thing that was kind of heelish to me.
True,
but they
true.
Were doing it to save Jinder. They pulled him out after the RKO. And what's funny, as soon as Randy Orton hits the RKO, I'm like, pull him out. Because I was pulling for Jinder at that point. Because I had gone all in. I wrote an article at 411 where I basically said, Jinder is going to win. So at this point, I needed him to win.
Gotcha.
And not only that, but I wanted them to pull him out because I also – because, you know, this was right in the midst of all the dive stuff with Randy Orton and the tweet
yeah.
from Rip Rogers and Daniel Parker and all that. And one of the things that I said is if you see them pull Jinder out after an RKO, they're helping him out, wouldn't that be a great opportunity for Randy Orton to dive? Even if it was just a, you know, a simple plancha or something like that. What they did was way better. And side note,
epic,
I'm
though.
Amongst the many who has watched the video of Randy Orton's face after he nearly killed one of the Singh brothers. It's just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
That Singh brother bounced back like it was nothing. So good on him for doing that. And telling
they're great workers, man. The Singh bros,
oh, yeah.
they could easily fight for that tag team title,
they,
too.
They
but,
might get
you know, right now they're playing the –
Oh, I should say I did a five things that five great things that can happen thanks to Jinder Mahal, and the Singh Bros being tag team champions was one of them, because I think they
oh,
are,
yeah.
they are great workers, and this is a much bigger spotlight than they've ever received before.
They've been fighting to get into WWE from a lot of people that used to work with them in the indies that I've read. You know, I've read interviews of former people that you know was working TNA and all these other companies that know the Singh Bros and. They just wanted to be in the WWE. They didn't care how or what or, you know, what they did. And they're playing the Indian J&J security, so it's just pretty cool.
They really are. And they're perfect at it. I mean, they have transformed themselves into this character, you know, night and day. I even loved when they first showed up and the commentary team's like, what are the Bollywood boys doing here? It's they didn't try to pretend
oh, yeah.
like it wasn't them, which I thought was amazing. So this is good. So
I love the button-down shirts, too.
Yeah, and then the colors and everything. I mean, they do it all, and they're fantastic performers, and I'm glad that more of the world has seen that. This is quite the upgrade from them being the Global Force Wrestling tag champs or whatever not too long ago. So good for them for getting this. I knew somebody who went out there with them when they were at Global Force Wrestling. She was one of the two dancers that they had with them, both American,
oh, okay,
by the way. what they do. So you wrote this as sort of a fan post for Cage Side Seats, and obviously it's garnered a heck of a reaction, better than some of their regular content. Is this something you do regularly? Is writing part of your thing, or is this like a one time where you were just like, I need to put this out there?
So I don't have any affiliations or, I'm not like with one place or one blog or anything, but I do regular, I'd say maybe a week or two articles for an NBA team, not for the team, but for one of the blogs on SB Nation.
Gotcha.
So I mostly do basketball. So I just saw this opportunity and I'm like, man, I gotta write this up. And, I think I might do more content for pro wrestling, because I focus on storylines and characters, and that's
right.
Kind of my, that's why I love wrestling, is because of storylines and characters.
And that's the way it should be. I mean, that's why, even if people won't admit it, that's why they tend to love wrestling. So I dig it. And you did a phenomenal job. And so they'd be smart. If I were Cage Side Seats, I'd be calling you and saying, hey, why don't we just get you to write for us more often? Because that's
I would be down. But, it's up to them. But I've received a couple offers. But, it's something I'd be willing to do. If you guys like my writing style and you want to read some of the content I do, whether you're a basketball fan or a wrestling fan, you can always follow me on my Twitter at Raymond Najjar. I post my articles whenever I do write.
Definitely. Yeah. And I will, I'm going to, when this airs and even today, I'm going to reshare the article. I'll make sure that people know where to find you, because it's great. And you did a great job. And I think that more people should do it and educate it. And that's when I was sharing it about the Facebook, basically telling people, go educate yourself. And I even had somebody that was like, at least one person, I have verifiable proof that you turned their opinion around. I know that wasn't your goal. But they were like, okay, I wasn't fully behind this before, but now I am now, because I realized what went into it. And I don't think you can ask for more than that. I think you did a hell of a job, and that shows.
I was blown away. I checked a Reddit. Somebody, one of my friends who knew that I posted the article, he just Googled the title of the article, and a Reddit forum came out, and there's people over there debating, several things about culture. They're breaking down Punjabi rap lyrics, and I was like, man, this is cool. These guys are
That's
going
good.
At it over something I posted. So, I thought it was pretty cool.
No, they should, and I know that, I saw somebody did a whole podcast on your article. I mean, there is stuff everywhere, and I think it's great. You've opened up a lot of eyes, and I don't think, that's what it's for, and you've done a great service, even accidental service, to a lot of wrestling fans out there. So,
I'm Jinder Mahal's unofficial manager.
That's right. That's why you have that hashtag Maharaja Mindset, which I think is great. And you could always stick with that. So at Raymond, RaymonNijjar on the Twitter. Please go out there and follow Raymond and see more of his work. I know you're a big basketball fan, so this is, of course, the third round between the Cavaliers and the Warriors. And it, from a wrestling standpoint, as someone who has put on wrestling and held a book and been in charge of booking and storytelling, to me, this is the ideal matchup. It's 1-1. This is the third round of them going at it, and you've got the Cavaliers versus the Warriors. They both just destroyed everybody in the playoffs. So who are you picking? Who do you, and even this way, who do you want to win and who's going to win?
The trilogy, man. Who I want to win, I want to see LeBron James slay the dragon. I want to see him do it. And I want all these debates to stop that, he's not better than Michael Jordan, because in my opinion, he destroys Michael Jordan. And that's a whole nother debate. I don't want to get into that.
Right.
I want LeBron to win, but the Warriors are too powerful, man. They're going to win.
It is tough. It is really tough. I grew up on the Bulls and Michael Jordan, and even having said that, I can't, you know, and I point this out in wrestling all the time. Like, I hate when people – it just came up today. I wrote an article where Road Warrior Animal is saying that the Dudleys aren't a legendary tag team, and I think it's crazy because they are a legendary tag team, as are the Road Warriors, and it's their different eras. It's apples and oranges, and I kind of think the same thing for LeBron and Michael, that they're both – you know, they're you could argue and say they're the two best ever to play the game, but you'll never see them against each other in their primes, so there's no way of knowing. And it's the
True.
Same thing with the Road Warriors and the Dudleys. But it's everyone wants to make that argument and pick a side, and it's hard for me to do that. But I would love to see LeBron James do it again. I think it's a better story. I think it would be, you know, wildly entertaining, and it's, you know, this is the matchup everybody's wanted to see, and that's what, if you were booking it, this is what you would also have booked. So that's
look at a game 7.
Oh yeah, I would definitely game 7. You know, I hope they get to a game 7. That's for sure. So, Raymond, I appreciate your time coming on the show. I know you've been all of a sudden inundated with requests off of what you thought was a simple fan post. So I appreciate you coming out and joining all the listeners.
Thank you, Greg. It was fun talking to you, man. And I'll definitely go ahead and subscribe to that podcast as well.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of DeMarco Wrestling. For Patrick O'Dowd, I am Greg DeMarco, and we will see you next time.
What makes a man? Is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top so we can know your story.
Shut your dumb mouth.